Hi, I'm Adam.
And I'm Nitsan.
And this is Stories from the East and West, telling you little-known stories from Central and Eastern Europe that changed our world.
1968 marked itself in world history as a time of global political unrest. In the US, the civil rights movement was fighting against racial discrimination. Social conflicts escalated in Western Europe, and student-led protests spread across many countries. Eastern Europe, meanwhile, was protesting authoritarian regimes.
While the Prague Spring was starting in Czechoslovakia, violent protests against censorship started on the streets of Poland. These fueled an ongoing, government-driven anti-Semitic campaign during which thousands of Polish Jews accused of anti-Polish sentiments were expelled from the country, their passports taken away. Today, we'll speak to Marian Marzyński, a film director who was one of those that left the country.
Coming up on Stories from the East and West.
Zlin, Praha, Warszawa, Madrid, London, Paris, New York, Casablanca.
Where you see a kind of totality of the human presence.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is exactly
right. Stories from the East and West.
We are rolling. Okay, so yeah. I take my headphones. All right. So you start.
So can you please tell me if now you're hearing me, is it okay? Is
my Our producer Monika met with Marian over Skype. He hasn't been able to travel to Poland recently due to the pandemic. Marian lives in Boston, where he's been living for over 20 years. He emigrated to the U.S. from Poland, where he was born into a Jewish family in 1937, just 2 short years before the outbreak of World War II, when Nazi Germany occupied Poland. As a small child, Marian and his parents were imprisoned in the Warsaw Ghetto. Marian's very first memories are from inside the ghetto walls.
Well, it's an interesting thing about memory, because I definitely believe that the first glimpses of memory starts at 5, and at 5 I was smuggled of the Warsaw Ghetto.
When the Nazis began deporting children to concentration camps, Marian's parents managed to smuggle him out of the ghetto to the other side of the walls where a guide was supposed to keep him safe. He spoke about it in his film Never Forget to Lie.
My guide places me in different apartments on the Christian side of Warsaw. She has a small sack of gold teeth inherited from my dentist grandfather. One tooth is worth perhaps a few nights in what might be called a bed and breakfast for Jews in hiding. Playing with other kids in the courtyard, I pretend I am part of the landlord's family. Until a neighbor says, I don't know anybody in their family looking like him, and I must disappear.
My film is called Never Forget to Lie, because that's what my parents told me. Unlike all other parents that tell children never lie, my parents told me never forget to lie. And the lie was that I was a child of a Polish officer, military, who was taken to the camp or who disappeared, and the mother who was also taken by the Germans. So I'm an orphan of Polish parents. And that's the only thing that I knew.
With this lie in mind, Marian began a journey from one hiding place to another.
It was easier than for other boys because I was not circumcised, because my father decided not to do it, which was quite unusual. Right, because he thought after the civil war in Spain, he really has a vision of the Holocaust, of the war. And that is totally unheard in 1937 for a Jewish boy in Poland not to be circumcised.
After staying with several families, he was finally accepted into a Catholic orphanage managed by the Sons of Divine Providence.
But again, showing that I'm not circumcised, it was the only way they could have accepted me. To be baptized was the condition to be accepted by the priest, first of all, by everybody, so you have to create a false birth church certificate.
Here, at the age of 6, I had my first communion and became the most dedicated altar boy.
Only the principal knew who I was. When the Germans visited the orphanage, he brought me to the chapel, and I would work around the altar or hide behind it.
When the war ended, Marian's mother managed to find him, but he no longer recognized her.
No, I really didn't recognize her, but at that time that she came to pick me up in 1945, I was so deeply religious and so much dedicated to the brothers who loved me, actually. I was an altar boy. I was really interested in becoming a priest. And I just decided that I have no parents, and the brothers and the sisters were my parents. So when this woman, after walking 60 kilometers from one orphanage to another, because she didn't know exactly which one I was, came to the dining room, I told her, "I don't know you, ma'am. My mother was young and was pretty. I don't know you." The first meeting was a fiasco, and the second, she started to tell me slowly about the family, about her sister, about other people in the family, and I start to remember. But that is a very strong feeling that I have today.
Unfortunately, Marian's father did not survive the war.
And slowly, my mother remarried with the man whose wife was and child was murdered in Auschwitz. And there was the family that actually was friend with my family before the war. That's after the war, the Jewish family repaired their life. They were replacing the people they lost. And my stepfather, whose name was Marzinski, told me that the war is over and I can say out loud the word Jew. But still, I was terrified by this word, and I remember in Warsaw, in the front of the parliament, when he wanted to make me comfortable with being Jewish, he would yell to me that everybody knows here that you are a Jew. Don't worry, it's okay now. The war is over, and I run away from him. My parents didn't think that having the Jewish past should be a trauma for me and for them. So therefore, we were talking openly about it in the house, and they wanted me to absorb the whole truth, who am I. They didn't want me to be in a false personality. They didn't want me to forget. So we were talking inside the house about the past.
When he grew up, Marian became a journalist and gradually started making films.
Well, I always wanted to be a journalist. I started to write to the children newspapers at the age of 12, 13, 14. And I went to study journalism. Then somebody discovered my voice and said that I should work for the radio. So I went to work for Polish radio and then Polish television.
Marian hosted two extremely popular TV shows.
One was called We Are All Judges, which was a discussion with ordinary people about the trials before the Polish court, a kind of retrial of the trials. And then Tournament of Town, which was a very popular entertainment show, which showed a competition between small towns.
There was only one TV channel at the time, and Marian's show had up to 10 million viewers. Here's Marian hosting a competition between the towns of Syców and Oleśnica.
Dzień dobry Państwu, witamy Państwa na Dolnym Śląsku, który po Mazowszu, Podkarpaciu i Mazurach podjął wezwanie do telewizyjnego turnieju miast. Halo, Syców!
Yeah, we didn't use the word celebrity at that time, but definitely I have a name and face recognition.
Marian's life was peaceful until the late 1960s, when political and social conflicts started growing across Europe. In the West, young people were rebelling against capitalism and the establishment, carrying communist slogans on their banners. Meanwhile, in the East, people were fighting against communism, wanting liberalization, civil rights, and less communist propaganda.
And it wasn't just individuals who wanted change. The communist parties in Poland and Czechoslovakia were suddenly torn between liberal factions advocating for democratization and those with conservative views.
In the 1950s, the party had turned towards internationalism, and the first secretary, Władysław Gomułka, declared that there would be no place for ethnic discrimination within its structures. But by the late 60s, the conservative faction was becoming increasingly nationalist and had started attacking the Jews within its ranks.
This conflict escalated in June of 1967, when Israel fought Egypt and a coalition of Arab countries in the so-called Six-Day War.
It soon became apparent that the Middle East power patterns of a decade were being changed in a matter of hours.
Israel won the military clash, and since Egypt was an ally of the Soviet Union, the Polish government was officially unhappy about the result. On the other hand, a large part of society opposed the communist regime and supported Israel.
Soon after that, the conservative-leaning First Secretary Gomułka started directly and publicly attacking Polish Jews, implying that their support of Israel in this conflict was an act against the Polish socialist state.
So then the new anti-Semitism emerged, and then the party demanded Jews to declare their loyalty or leave the country. And that created a huge reaction among Jews. There were maybe 30,000 by that time of them. And Jews started to gradually be leaving the country.
At the same time, at the National Theatre in Warsaw, censors had put a stop to a new staging of the 19th century play Dziady by the Polish bard Adam Mickiewicz. The ban immediately led to large protests, and it was Jews who were quickly accused of instigating them.
In response, the Communist Party organized so-called anti-Zionist rallies in factories and city streets all over the country. Suddenly, what began as an internal conflict within the party had grown into a nationwide conflict. The party propaganda was more than effective in creating a hostile environment for Polish Jews. Many people were forced to quit their jobs and eventually leave the country.
Right. Well, an example is my stepfather, who was in technology, in the construction technology, in the Science Institute, and was a party member. It was a party meeting, and at the party meeting, some colleagues told him that they discovered that before the war, he was the member of a Jewish scouting organization or Zionist organization, and then they actually understood why he's so hostile to his Polish subordinate, and then he does not deserve to be a party member, and they voted to get rid of him as a party member and very soon to make him retired.
Those who chose to leave the country, most of them under duress, had to sign a document renouncing their Polish citizenship. Their signature was rewarded with a one-way ticket.
In my case, of somebody that was a television celebrity, the situation was much more difficult because although there was, what I found out after the war, a huge amount of information at the secret police files against me, calling me a Jew and anti-communist, I could not be fired because television was not run by the police, but by the Central Committee of the party, on the much higher level. And the fact that I was allowed still to have my television programs made impossible to fire me, because immediately my programs was also be gone. And there was also another interest among party people, is to keep certain Jews to prove that they are not so overtly anti-Semitic, because there are few Jews that are still there. So I was not fired, but I felt around me that that is more and more difficult. And my wife, who was not Jewish, was trying to convince me that I have no future in Poland. And we had a little child. And then in 1969, I went to television and said that I'm leaving. And then what I heard is that I'm the last Jew that they would expect to leave. Somebody said that you are the only Jew, Marian, that I will be not afraid to tell anti-Semitic joke in front of you. So to which I said that's exactly the reason why I'm leaving, because I don't want to be a monument of an unknown Jew. And we left.
It's from this station that I left Poland 12 years ago. The platform was just as empty as it is today. Only conductors, no people. Friends, even families, were too scared to come.
The border guards recognized the TV star.
They were recognizing me. We were living through the town that participated in the tournament of town. They invited me and my parents for coffee. And they said, we are sure that you're going to return very soon.
But Marian didn't come back. At first, he considered emigrating to Denmark.
Skibet is my first word in Danish. It means ship. In the late 60s, when a sexual revolution erupted in Denmark, this steamship was sailing on the St. Lawrence River in Canada. Copenhagen was short of nightclub locations, and the ship was sold and anchored in the harbor, opening its door to live sex on stage. Soon we arrived, Polish Jews accused by the ruling Communist Party of pro-Israeli sentiments.
And at one point, when those 500 Polish Jews came and they couldn't find rooms in the hotel for them, they decided to turn this nightclub, I may say, into a hotel. And each family got a small cabin and there were food. And we were living there until they were able to get a permanent housing in Copenhagen. It's something that's happened once for a century. And it's for me, whatever it takes, I must make a film about it.
Marian documented everyday life on the ship, adding his unmistakable, bittersweet commentary. He recorded pastimes, small announcements on the ship's walls, rivalries, the passengers' first encounters with Danes, and a visit from the Danish prince bringing greetings from the queen. He interviewed people, a literary critic, a student, a cello player, a music producer. Many of them spoke of having to choose between their Polish and Jewish identities for the first time in their lives. Most had not even been religious.
Almost everybody was non-religious, and I don't think that in this first generation nobody became religious. I think that the Jewish identity was completely replaced by the Polish one. Jewishness was a predicament, but not really identity. They were all Polish.
So who were we? Jews whose national feeling had been offended, Poles whose personal dignity had been violated, idealists who had lost their faith.
Since Jews leaving the country had to renounce their Polish citizenship, they were stateless until they received a new one. Only a small part of them chose to move to Israel, where they could easily be given new passports. However, many of them stayed in an in-between state for a long time.
The people themselves left completely emotionally. Most of them were at the age that they could not really count on any prospects of job. They didn't know language. And they lived in what I call the frozen frame of life between the past and the future that they could not even imagine. So they hate the past and they didn't see the future. And then I discovered what the really nature of immigration is. That immigration is an emotional decision. It's not a rational decision. Because people run away from something that feels very uncomfortable to something that is totally unknown. And of course, for a filmmaker and journalist, it's a great subject.
After emigrating, Marianne's filmmaking changed significantly.
I think that the big difference was that with all my success in Poland, I was never able to be personal in Poland. I could never tell my personal story. The journalists would never ask me about my past. They would never ask me a question, where were you born, how was your war, the question that you are asking me today. And if I would answer, censorship would certainly not approve it, because that was one of the concept of secrecy. We had to be quiet about being Jewish, because that could have a consequences from the anti-Semites. So the big difference for me was that as a journalist, as a filmmaker, only when I came to Denmark, I can actually publicly pronounce the word Jew. I never pronounced this word in Poland throughout my entire career. It was only spoke at home.
Denmark wasn't Marianne's last stop. He decided to move on and emigrated to the United States, where he soon started teaching filmmaking at the Rhode Island School of Design.
And when I came to the United States, it was the same thing. I finally have an identity. I have a personal story. And it changed, of course, the style of my filmmaking. It became more personal, more literary. In Poland, for instance, we never used the commentary in the film because it was always a subject of censorship, and we were always forced to do propaganda. So all our films were actually without words. But in the United States, I didn't, and in Denmark, I didn't have to do it. So I developed a style of commentary that was actually a character in the film.
I was hired by accident. After my arrival, I learned that Mr. Binks loved Czech films of the 60s, was sure I was from Czechoslovakia, and assumed that everybody over there speaks English. But my second language was French, and I barely understood what my students were saying.
In his films, Marianne talks about his personal stories, his experiences of war, emigration, and building a new life in a foreign culture, often dissecting memories of tragic events using humor.
Humor is a part of tragedy, because when you lose hope in life, and you have to hold onto something, and humor became the way of holding on life. Humor is also the result of certain eternal optimism, because nothing could happen worse to me than death. My childhood was life surrounded by death. My after-war life and life today is life without death. And the use of humor showed the absurdity of racism, of Holocaust, of lack of justice. It just keeps us alive. So that's how I use humor.
Today, Marianne still lives in the US and visits Poland when he can, often with a camera by his side. He's been revisiting the places from his memories, telling his story.
In 1981, he made a return to Poland. It showed his journey to Poland after 12 years of emigration and documented the social changes that were happening during the Solidarity movement. He would go on to make several more film journeys to Poland. In Shtetl, he arrives to Poland with a friend from Chicago who is searching for their Jewish roots. After the tournament, meanwhile, shows Marianne visiting Sitsuf, one of the towns where he had hosted a tournament show in 1965. While in Jewish Blues, he visits Kraków during the annual Jewish Culture Festival.
65 years have passed since the war, and Polish youth are left with a Jewish enigma. Puzzled by this loss of civilization and culture, they created a Jewish nostalgia, a kind of Jewish blues. I am a subject of this nostalgia, a Holocaust child survivor of the Warsaw Ghetto.
And in Never Forget to Lie, Marian travels to Warsaw to participate in an annual gathering of child Holocaust survivors.
Because I think that we have a child inside us to the very, very end of our life. And then the older we are, the more the child knocks the door to us. And if not during the day, during the night, in our sleeps, my film Never Forget to Lie was to relieve the pain of the not be afraid of the childhood. Even the childhood was terrible. Childhood trauma is something that adults should reveal in order to have a relief from this. So I am just doing it to have a better peace of mind.
This episode of Stories from the Eastern West was produced for Culture PL, the digital face of the Adam Mickiewicz Institute. It was hosted by Adam Zhuwowski and me, Nitzan Reisner.
It was reported and written by Monika Poroba. It was edited by Wojciech Elekczak and me and Nitzan, and Wojciech did all the sound design and music.
We would like to thank Marian Marzyński for finding the time to talk to us and for allowing us to use excerpts from his films to illustrate our conversation. All the films are available on Marian's Vimeo channel. The films we used were Never Forget to Lie, Return to Poland, Skibet, Life on Mars, and Jewish Blues.
And if you want to learn anything else about the story you just heard, the show notes can be found in your podcast app or on the Stories from the East and West website at sftew.com.
This was actually the last episode of Season 3, but we're not quite taking the next month off. We're releasing a sneak peek of an upcoming mini-series about how jazz traveled to Eastern Europe on the bandwaves of the outlawed Voice of America, and how it inspired a whole generation of musicians behind the Iron Curtain.
The mini-series, as you might expect, will be full of incredible music, so be sure to check the feed and give it a listen.
Thanks so much for being with us for another great season. See you next month.
Thank you. Bye.